A Kiwi Perspective, The Global Mental Health Crisis. Introduction. Kia ora and welcome to A Kiwi Perspective, the podcast where we explore global challenges through the lens of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Today we tackle a complex and deeply personal issue, the global mental health crisis. This isn't just a story about other countries, it's our story too. It's the story of our tamariki, our wānau, our kaumātua. It's about the pressures we face, the systems we've built or failed to build, and the future we want to shape. In this episode, I want to offer not just facts, but context. Not just solutions, but questions. From the alarming statistics to the cultural considerations unique to our Pacific corner of the world, let's unpack what it means to live and struggle with mental health in 2025. Section 1, the global landscape of mental health. Globally, mental health disorders are among the leading causes of disability. Depression affects over 300 million people worldwide. Anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. These aren't fringe issues, they're part of our collective human experience. Every country, regardless of wealth, is grappling with rising rates of mental distress. It affects productivity, family cohesion, education, and life expectancy. The World Health Organization has declared mental health one of the defining health challenges of our time. Yet funding is sparse, stigma is entrenched, and access to care is grossly unequal. In low-income countries, up to 85% of people with mental health conditions receive no treatment. Even in high-income countries, only about half get adequate care. The disparity is profound and morally indefensible. What we're seeing is a disconnect between the rhetoric and the reality. Mental health is talked about more than ever before, in politics, media, even corporate boardrooms. But the lived experience for millions remains unchanged. In fact, for many, things have worsened. This speaks to a failure of implementation, a failure of will, and in some cases, a failure of imagination. Climate change, war, displacement, rising inequality, and the long tail of the COVID-19 pandemic have all intensified the psychological load. The refugee crisis in Europe, the opioid epidemic in North America, political instability in Latin America, these are not separate from mental health. They are core to it. And in the digital age, the pressure of social comparison, misinformation, and algorithmic addiction are taking their toll. Our attention is fragmented, our sleep disrupted, and our relationships increasingly virtual. Technology promises connection but often delivers isolation. It's a paradox that our brains are not well equipped to handle. Section 2, Aotearoa's own crisis. Let's bring the lens home. In New Zealand, mental health has been in a state of crisis for years. Our suicide rates are among the highest in the OECD, particularly for young people and Maori. Despite numerous government reviews, task forces, and funding boosts, including the $1.9 billion wellbeing budget of 2019, outcomes remain grim. We have not seen the kind of transformative change that was promised. In fact, for many on the front lines, things feel worse. The 2023 Mental Health and Wellbeing Commission report found that services are overwhelmed, under-resourced, and inconsistent. Wait times for youth services can stretch into months. Rural areas are especially hard hit with sparse access to professionals. Mental health professionals themselves report exhaustion, disillusionment, and being trapped in systems that prevent them from doing their jobs effectively. And for Maori and Pacifica communities, culturally appropriate care is still the exception, not the norm. Despite the presence of excellent Kaupapa Maori services and community-led initiatives, mainstream systems continue to marginalize these approaches, often treating them as add-ons rather than integral parts of the solution. So what's going wrong? Some critics argue that our system is reactive, not proactive, focused on acute intervention rather than prevention. Others highlight a fundamental mismatch between Western models of psychiatry and the holistic, community-based approaches valued by many in New Zealand. We have a deeply siloed health system where mental health is still separated from physical health, social services, education, and housing, despite all these being intertwined. People are falling through the cracks not because they don't want help, but because the help doesn't fit their needs, their culture, or their reality. Section 3, the cultural disconnect. Here's where things get controversial. Western psychology has dominated global mental health narratives, often at the expense of indigenous knowledge. In New Zealand, that tension is sharply felt. Maori health models like Te Wera Tapa Wā, which frames well-being through a four-pillar model, mental, physical, family, and spiritual health, offer a more integrated and arguably more humane framework. Yet these models continue to be marginalized within mainstream services. Token consultation does not equal genuine partnership. A few bilingual posters in a waiting room do not make a service culturally safe. Cultural safety requires power sharing, respect, and sustained investment in Indigenous leadership. It requires decolonizing our health systems, not just tweaking them. Moreover, the biomedical model, with its emphasis on diagnosis and medication, can be alienating for those who view mental distress as relational, spiritual, or environmental in origin. The risk is that we pathologize people's responses to systemic trauma without addressing the root causes: colonization, poverty, racism. This isn't just about Maori either. Pacifica communities often experience similar marginalization, with services failing to reflect Pacific worldviews of interconnectedness, spirituality, and collective identity. Migrant communities, too, face barriers, from language and stigma to visa insecurity and cultural dislocation. Section 4, Youth at the Edge. Young people in Aotearoa are in a precarious place. They face unprecedented challenges, from climate anxiety to housing insecurity, digital overload to identity confusion in a world of competing narratives. Social media has changed the landscape of adolescence. The internet never sleeps, and neither do young people's worries. The 2022 Youth Health and Wellbeing Survey found that nearly one in four high school students had experienced significant depressive symptoms in the past year. LGBTQ+ youth and Rangatahi Māori are especially vulnerable. Many face bullying, marginalization, and lack of support at home, in schools, and online. Our education system, though well-intentioned, often lacks the tools to respond. Mental health education remains patchy. Counselors are overworked. Teachers are not trained to handle complex trauma. Meanwhile, social media platforms pump content that can glamorize self-harm or distort reality. Algorithms amplify extremes. Content moderation lags behind the pace of digital harm. Some schools have started introducing mindfulness programs, peer support groups, and well-being initiatives. But without systemic support, these are band-aids on bullet wounds. Mental health cannot be outsourced to a single period on a timetable. It must be embedded in school culture, teacher training, and curriculum design. What does this mean for the future of New Zealand? It means a generation growing up with resilience, yes, but also with scars. And unless we change our structures, our narratives, and our priorities, those scars may deepen. Section 5, the role of the state and its limits. The New Zealand government has tried to respond. The Ministry of Health, the Mental Health and Wellbeing Commission, and local DHBs have all launched initiatives aimed at expanding services, integrating Maori-led models, and embedding mental health into primary care. But the reality on the ground often looks different. Systemic inertia is real. Bureaucracy moves slowly, and sometimes public systems are not trusted, especially by communities that have been failed before. For many, the state represents not care, but control, especially when it comes to mental health interventions that involve coercion, such as involuntary treatment orders. There's also the elephant in the room, funding. Mental health is chronically underfunded relative to physical health. While the $1.9 billion well-being budget was a landmark moment, much of that funding was tied up in structural reforms that have yet to show results on the ground. Frontline workers report burnout, disillusionment, and moral injury. The Auditor General's 2022 report noted that the public still lacks clarity on where the money has gone and what impact it has had. Accountability remains elusive, transparency is patchy, and those most affected, patients, wānau, and communities, are too often excluded from decision-making. Section 6, private sector, public good. The rise of mental health startups, online therapy platforms, and workplace well-being initiatives offers new hope and new tensions. On one hand, innovation can fill gaps. Digital tools can reach people in remote areas. Apps can offer anonymity and immediacy. There is promise in AI-powered chatbots, guided meditation platforms, and virtual peer support groups. But who regulates these tools? What happens when mental health becomes commodified, when therapy is gamified, monetized, or algorithmically delivered? The risk is a two-tier system. Digital quick fixes for the poor, bespoke therapy for the rich. The ethics of digital mental health are still being debated, and we may be sleepwalking into a future where convenience trumps care. In New Zealand, we've seen a growing market for corporate wellness programs, but many workers remain skeptical. A mindfulness seminar doesn't fix toxic workplace culture. A free app doesn't replace a living wage. The challenge is to ensure that the private sector complements rather than replaces public responsibility. We must ask, who benefits from these innovations? Who is left out? And are we solving root causes or simply easing symptoms? Section 7, Wanaungatanga, not isolation. What might a distinctly Kiwi response to the mental health crisis look like? It would center Wanaungatanga, relationships, connection, and collective responsibility. It would recognize that mental health is not just a personal issue, but a social one. That healing happens not just in clinics, but in homes, marae, classrooms, and workplaces. It would prioritize prevention, inclusion, and equity. It would elevate Indigenous models not as alternatives, but as foundational. It would move from consultation to co-governance, from crisis response to systemic redesign. It would ask not only how we treat mental illness, but how we build mental well-being. This requires investment in community-led solutions, from peer support networks to iwi-led health providers. It requires trust. It requires long-term funding, and it requires humility from those in power. It also requires addressing the social determinants of mental health, poverty, housing, education, discrimination, and justice. Mental health is not separate from these, it is shaped by them. A healthy society cannot be built on six systems. Conclusion, the way forward. So where does that leave us? The global mental health crisis is vast, messy, and deeply human. New Zealand is not immune, but nor are we powerless. We have the tools, we have the knowledge, we even have the funding if we choose to allocate it differently. But we need courage. Courage to rethink our assumptions, to listen to marginalized voices, to move beyond slogans and into structural change, to make space for different ways of knowing, being, and healing. If we do that, perhaps Aotearoa can offer not just a critique of the global crisis, but a model of how to respond. One grounded in connection, community, and care. One that embraces our diversity, honours our tangata whenua, and commits to a future where every person's mental well-being is seen as a collective priority. Thanks for listening to A Kiwi Perspective. Until next time, kia kaha, kia maya, kia mana wanui.